Hello, this is From Rookery End. This is Mike. The season's over. The season's over, and here to celebrate getting through, getting to the end, limping over the finish line. JC, Geordie's here.
Hello.
David's here.
Hello.
And Kieran's here. KT, Hollywood, how are you, mate?
I wish everyone could see Dave's face, really.
In fairness, Dave has been away for a couple of days, so it's not just the football that's beaten him into submission. But we finished off the season. I think we finished in 11th place, yep. About 40 points off Burnley, who won the league.
Yeah, but only 6 points off the playoffs in the end.
Only 6 points off the playoffs, which in fairness is a damning indictment, I think, of the quality of the Championship this year. And also, we're not going to go into it, but it does show how easy it should have been for Watford to qualify for at least the playoffs. It has been a... We've ballsed it up, haven't we? But let's talk about this. Let's talk about this final game. Let's get it over and done. Watford have beaten Stoke 2-0. Well, I think one of the first things, Dave, I want to ask you about is when the team sheet came out, again, there was complaints that these youngsters aren't featuring in the first 11. I've got a bit of a theory about why that's not happening, but what's your take on that? Does it bother you?
Well, it would have been nice to see a bit more of Blake or Greaves. I know Eddie Amos has been injured, hasn't he? But we still got, you know, another good game for Andrews, another impressive performance from him. They were, you know, and then we had Morris and Greaves and Blake coming on towards the end, and I think there's the situation hanging over Blake with he's not signed a professional contract yet. Looks like he possibly won't. Even though it wasn't really a proper football match, it didn't really feel like a proper football match in any meaningful way. The manager has still got to go out there and send the players out there and win games. There was a couple of players there who was probably going to be the last time we ever see them as well. You know, they deserve another one last time to get out there and say goodbye to the fans or whatever. So I kind of get it. And to be honest with you, I found it very hard to care about anything one way or the other, really, today. It was just, we were all there because we all had to turn up and do our duty as season ticket holders. But it's just...
Let me tell you, kids, don't go to Munich for 48 hours with no sleep and a lot of beer, because that you end up hollowed out like poor old Dave. Kieran, I got a bit of a theory. I think Dave alluded to it there, that Chris Wilder can't really afford to risk a hammering on the last day, because, you know, Dave's a joke with Dave, none of us do really care, and that's probably why we're saying play the youngsters. He will, as of now, be looking for a new job, won't he? So do you think that lack of... sort of changing up the squad is potentially a bit of self-preservation for Chris Wilder?
Yeah, 100%. Any job that comes up in the summer, I'm sure Chris Wilder in the Championship will be in contention for, despite the indifferent results that he's had with us. He has pedigree of taking teams out of the Championship into the Premier League, and I think any club that has a vacancy over the summer will probably have a look at him. Also, he made some big statements in the last few weeks, didn't he, about the players and very much insinuated that there were a number of them that probably not pulling their weight and didn't care enough. So for him to then on the last day of the season really overhaul the first 11 and essentially, you know, play a load of youngsters, and I think it was a positive that we saw a few of them at the final, you know, the final few minutes. You know, I think we needed to win and end the season on a positive, and he needed to end the season on a positive, because it hasn't quite worked out, has it? As Dave alluded to, 6 points off the playoffs. Actually, a number of those points that we should have earned came under his stewardship.
Yeah, I mean,
drop points.
One of the notes I made during the game was that we survived a 2-0. We survived going 2-0 up, which we haven't done too many times this season. We've thrown points away. It's been a sort of, I was going to say watchword, but a sort of example of the issues, the malaise that we faced under Wilder, that we haven't been able to hang on to these leads. One of my sort of slightly more cynical and worrying thoughts, Geordie, was that the reason we're not seeing these players, the youngsters, as they're sort of loosely termed, are they up to it? Because if they were, we probably would have been seeing them sooner. Kieran rightly pointed out there that Chris Wilder's been pretty firm talking about his squad and whether they've been delivering enough, suggesting they haven't. So if we've got the next cab off the rank, so to speak, ready and fit and ready and raring to go, I think Adrian Blake's a dodgy one, because he's going, I think, isn't he? And that brings with it its own complications. But do you think there's a concern that these youngsters that we're clamouring for basically aren't up to it?
Well, possibly. Quite possibly. I think Andrews is coming.
I can hear everyone screaming to the podcast, Mike, we don't know, because he won't play him, you idiot.
Yeah, I think Andrews has been given his chance. Right played back. Well. Yeah, he's played well. If he'd come to the game and didn't know the players, you wouldn't have gone, oh, he's a young lad. Yeah. You know, he fitted in. He had a few shots when people were faffing around trying to get the ball under control up front, up top, you know, and taking too many passes. He got it and he whipped crosses in and he looks like he's comfortable. So I think that's good. And I guess the question is, if you blood too many, does that compromise all of them? Because they haven't all got the protection of a whole 11 or 10 other professionals around them. So I think you know, he's probably the one who's most advanced. At the start of the season, we didn't see him. We were crying out for a right wing back for under Edwards. So I think when you're younger, you get a few weeks or a few months can be huge in your development, both mentally and physically and preparation. So Andrews is ready now. He wasn't ready at the start of the season. The other guys, you know, have been in and around the periphery and probably been training. Wilder's seen it. He probably thinks they're not an upgrade on what we got. There is a professionalism in this, like you said, there's a desire to see the season out. I think a good pre-season for them might mean that these 2 or 3 months, which for us will go like that once you get to our age, for them, they'll get fitter, they'll get stronger, they'll get more acclimatised in their first team environment. And if they're ready to hit the ground running next season, whoever the manager is, then they may be making a claim for a starting place.
Tremendous, comprehensive answer there for Geordie. I think you've staked a claim for a bit more of a regular spot on the old podcast, Geordie. Very, very good. You've got me feeling a bit happier about these youngsters. My brother's here, Andy's just turned up. He's pretending to be doing something important. He's wandering off with his partner Guinness. Andy, I just want to get your one sentence. We've talked about Chris Wilder and his performance. He's going to be disappearing off into, I was going to say the sunset, but it's sort of grey mizzle, which kind of sums up Watford's season. I think the weather is befitting the occasion, really. Wilder came in, we were hopeful of still making the playoffs. How would you rate Chris Wilder's brief tenure as Watford boss? Thanks very much. I think that sums it up nicely. That does sum it up, but
pushing treacle up a hill. It was a lost task before he even started, and that was obvious. I said when he came in, he wouldn't win more than 3 games. I think.
How many did we win?
I think 3 games. Is it?
Bingo. He is available for your lottery numbers as well. Let's get onto the game then. Very quickly, started off under the pump a little bit. It felt like Dan Backman had to make a really, really smart save after 20 seconds. And I think the sort of who did turn up at Vicarage Road might have been thinking, oh, my God, here we go. And it was really the story of probably certainly the opening salvo. Stoke looked like they were more likely to cause problems. Geordie mentioned Ryan Andrews. He did all right, but it was a bit of a rearguard action, wasn't it? But then it sort of developed into an open game, and it felt like it could be a bit of fun, a bit of sort of last day fun and frolics.
Yeah, it was. It's the sort of game that if we were already in the playoffs, like Luton or Middlesbrough, and that was all out of the way, then you could have really gotten into the spirit of the occasion and had fun. But because we know how bad the season's been, it was just, even though it was quite open and back and forth, I still was just sort of looking around, just going, honestly, what is the point of this?
It was very backman and forth, I think you remember.
Yeah, but they were. We went back to three at the back today. So you had Andrews and Semmer as the wing backs, and you obviously had the three centre backs. And it looked like Stoke were very much trying to sort of take advantage of that and put it into the spaces in between the wing backs and the outside centre backs. There are a lot of raking long balls down the side, which they got in quite a few times, and flash balls across the box. Backman's made a lot of good saves, and he's come for a few and cut out a few crosses, but Stoke will be thinking they should have had 2 or 3 in the first half at least, really. We had a few little chances and little forays into the box, but again, it was, you know, Davis went on to get his goal, but a number of times when he gets the ball and he just wants to get it out of his feet or shift it, and he always seems to shift it into the place, into the spaces where there are players, rather than going away into the space. It was a bit of a frustrating afternoon for him, but it was pretty entertaining stuff. It was very open. It was very, very end of season between two teams with no pressure, and I don't know, I suppose goal bonuses were the only things on the line for the players.
So I don't think really there's too much value in pulling that game apart, as Dave's alluded to there. It's a dead rubber. It's not one that either club is going to be making DVDs of. I don't think either set of fans is going to be skipping away from Vicarage Road having seen their team in action there. Let's forward wind to the goals then. KT, let's talk about that first one. Someone that involved two people, one that we almost certainly won't see next season and one person that we hope we will. I think Ismail Assar broke through and was asking for a penalty, was still asking for a penalty after Watford had scored, I'd noticed, walking back to the centre circle, talking to the ref, asking why the pen wasn't given. Ismail, we got the goal, it's fine, you can let that one go. But lovely finish from loser, Kieran. How important is keeping him going to be? Do you think he's done enough for us to, as supporters, be the man that builds a team around? Does that strike sort of give us enough hope that he's one of the key protagonists in a successful team next year?
This is very much a personal opinion. I think we've seen very much that he has an unbelievable amount of ability, especially at championship level. I think we noticed after that injury that he suffered at Millwall that we lacked that kind of creative influence in the middle of the park. I think what's been difficult is that because we have been so poor this second half of the season, I don't think we've really been able to see the best of him because the players around him haven't given him the opportunity to play with that freedom and that touch that maybe we would see if we were in a position where we're higher up the table and playing with confidence. Absolutely, I think he's an important player. Absolutely, I would love to see him next season. Do I think we will? No, if I'm being really honest. I think he's very much one of the assets that we will probably look to try and get a good fee for. And I think from his point of view, look, he missed out on the World Cup with Morocco because of that injury. I'm sure that he still has aspirations to play for his country and is at the highest level possible. Is the championship the best place for him? No. So I imagine that he will probably look at other opportunities, but of course he's massively important if we can keep hold of him, because he would be if we can keep him a major player in that midfield for us, but I don't see him being here.
So he's just too good for us. He's KT's slightly worrying take on our Moroccan maestro. The other goal, Geordie, Keenan Davis, I thought the one thing you could say about the goal is it kind of rewarded persistence in that passage of play. So, you know, he probably earned that goal in that moment. Nice goal. Did we see enough of that from him throughout his spell at Watford? And do you think there's any chance that Watford will be interested in trying to keep him at the club, even if he wanted to come back to Vicarage Road, which I doubt?
I don't think he'll be top of the list of players we want to bring in. He's not burnt the league up.
Have we got any players between us at the moment that we're definitely going to keep?
No, I mean, to the goal was good. I mean, he kind of got it. He thought, I'll try and get him my left foot. Looked down, saw another foot next to his left foot. I thought, well, I'll try that one. And of course, all the defenders had gone to block his left foot, and he had a free little path to goal. And Arrows was there ready to, if he'd scuffed it, he would have been able to put it in. So it was a good couple of minutes. I mean, there's probably someone in the, was it 20,000? You know, yeah. Was that itchy chin kind of thing you used to do at school? You know, 20,000, you know, if you spread out attendance. There's probably someone who went to the loo and missed both goals. And I mean, that's someone who's kind of, that is probably, should have got fan of the year, because that is the person who's most epitomised Watford this season, is just missing the first pre-season game pretty much today. Yeah. You know, and they've potentially missed both goals. I think Davis is okay. You can see that, but if you want to be a player at the top level, you've got to do more than just one thing. And he's got a good left foot, and he's a bit like Samo when he kind of wants to get in his left foot and he finds a way to get it. But strikers need split seconds, and if it comes in your right foot, you've got to hit the right foot, and if it comes not perfect, you've got to hit it. You get the shot in, it might get deflected, it might go in. A lot of you see like Erling Haaland's top of the most chances missed. It's because he gets so many chances because he shoots. And I think if you try and create the perfect opportunity, you can't do it. And I think in our team, where we have no cohesion, a player who isn't fast particularly is quite bulky, but is always up against two championship centre backs, and he's not going to get any free kicks or anything. It seems like a bit of a waste. So I don't really think, for the money he would cost, I guess, in a fee and the wages he'd be expecting, I don't think he's kind of put himself top of Gino's shopping list.
Massive question marks then over Watford's rebuild in the final third. Midfield, I guess, is a massive question as well. Just one quick question before we draw a veil over today and the season. Defensively, I think we're all probably expecting to see Porteous, to see Hurt, to see more of Andrews, probably Backman, although I think a lot of people would argue that he's an issue as well, and he might well be one that Gino can magic up £3 or 4 million quid for to fill that financial black hole. So we'll watch this space. But defensively, it feels like we have probably got a better idea of who we're going to see step out in yellow come August. has it felt like the sort of Watford defending disease has sort of finally has got hold of Portis and hurt a little bit? I mean, there was a bit of captain calamity going on for all of the players at one stage across that back line, wasn't it? If it's going to be Andrews hurt and Porteous plus a few others, are we happy with that, or are we worried?
Not sure. I think it's hard to say with too much confidence, because we just don't know what the whole makeup of the team's going to be. We don't know who the head coach is going to be. But I do think Hurt and Porteous have shown enough since they've come in that they, on their day, you know, pretty decent championship centre-backs. You know, Hurt's played a much higher level than this, and Porteous is, you know, this is an upward step for him. Hurt maybe is sort of, his career's probably peaked, but he's still not 30 yet. He's in his late 20s, and he's confident. He's decent on the ball. He's left-footed, so I've got no problem with those two being in the team next season. But who knows? There may be more that come back. Is Cabasele still going to be here? Is Troostekong going to come back from his loan? It's very difficult to say with any certainty about next season and what the head coach will want, whoever that man will be. But I think they've been all right. I think it's difficult, you know. Our centre-backs have been an issue for a long time, haven't they? We've talked about it countless times over the years, and we were still stuck with that sort of that crop of Troostekong, Cabasele, Sierra Alta, Cathcart, and we never had the right balance. We never knew who the definite right first choice two were, but since they've come in, they've played pretty much every game, haven't they? And they've really sort of cemented their place in the team, and I don't think they've done much wrong, to be honest.
We shall see. So the season's over. Watford have beaten Stoke 2-0. It's sort of, the atmosphere wasn't as toxic, I think, as the club might have feared. And it certainly felt like, certainly looking at social media, there were sort of comments about the amount of police and stewards that were in position today. I do wonder whether that has got a little bit to do with the visitors. They travelled in big numbers today, probably going to make a bit of a day of it. There was one incident with a banner in the 1881 area. I think it said cowards on it, and the stewards did try to take that down, but even that was a bit of a half-hearted effort to try and grab that. The guys in the 1881 were sort of having a bit of a fun chucking it to each other to avoid the stewards.
I think we should say, though, on that, we don't need to go too much into it because people will have their feelings about this or not, but I think it is a disgrace, and we've seen it in the last few matches with all, you know, we had a Pozzo out, Gino out, and we've had, you know, obviously the prevailing mood in the nation as well at the moment. There are lots of issues around protests and what you should be allowed to do and what you can and can't do at the moment. But it is pathetic. Stewards trying to get rid of a banner in the stand that says cowards. I mean, I think it is a joke, really. And if we're going to see more of that in the future, it's a problem.
And Andy just said to me that the stewards were forced into retreat because they had the necessary paperwork for it, which is absolutely, absolutely sensational. So congratulations on admining correctly to the 1881. And obviously, I think it does speak to an issue. There are definite storm clouds, not only outside the pub here in Watford. There are storm clouds gathering around Vicarage Road. But I think credit to the Watford supporters, who have in general been incredibly patient this season. And I think there is a fine line. It's difficult to support a team and a club who is obviously flailing around as it is struggling. Some people will say support means support in the literalist sense of the word, which is turning up, clapping them, cheering them, whatever. Others will point to the fact that we have a right to, and it's important that we sort of scratch beneath the surface. There's a whole range of ways to support the football club, and I think that will become clear in the fullness of time how that needs to manifest itself. But I think ultimately, it was a sort of, the season ended as it kind of has been all season, a bit of a damp squib, wasn't it? There weren't any protests, there was no change in atmosphere, there was no worrying tone or anything, was there whatsoever. It finished Watford 2, Stoke 0.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
So before the game, there was a couple of things that needed to be cleared off. First, and perhaps most enjoyably, Watford women clinched the National League Southern Premier Division. Is that right, Kieran?
Correct.
They won it in, well, quite exciting circumstances on Sunday. They did what they had to do. They won away at Billericay, thumped them 3-0, I believe it was, and had to hope that Oxford didn't match their result. They didn't. Oxford lost, so Watford won it and now move on to the playoff, well, the promotion game, which is a rerun of the cup final against Nottingham Forest at MK Dons. I know as many as of us from the Rookery End are going to try and get there. It'd be great to get good numbers along to that one. But Kieran, I think, really, probably talking about the atmosphere, one of the warmest moments, one of the best sort of rounds of applause and cheers was for the women's team. They've deserved it, haven't they?
Yeah, very much so. And you know, I haven't been on the podcast a lot in the last few years because I've been working in the women's game with the FA. And one of the things that I've noticed, obviously, in that time is the growth of the women's side of the game. And we've had the women's team at Vicarage Road in the past. And this isn't a criticism in any way, but at times the team have been brought out at half-time when not many people are in the stands, they're getting their half-time beer. But this was right before the game kicked off, and actually to hear the cheer and to hear the reception that the players got, I think was again a sign of how far the game has come. People were genuinely pleased for them, genuinely interested. You know, they handed out the Player of the Season award for the women's team alongside the awards that they were handing out for the men's. So, yeah, really positive. Obviously, the job is not done yet. As you mentioned, they've got to play Nottingham Forest in a playoff at Milton Keynes Dons on the 20th of May. I think kickoff is at 1 p.m. The winner of that game will get promoted into the Women's Championship, which is the second tier of the Women's Pyramid. So, massive game for them. They got relegated on the last kick of the season last year into the third tier. So, it'd be a massive achievement to bounce straight back.
Massive congratulations to Watford Women. One more game to go. Those seasons not done, we'll be there to support you. And I think it really is important that we draw attention to this sort of stuff, because the club have obviously ramped up their support of that team certainly in the last couple of seasons. We know that wasn't always the case, and I think that sort of testament to the football club to recognise that everyone that plays under the Watford Football Club banner is representing the football club, and we're Watford Football Club supporters. Delighted to see that. So well done to that team. Absolutely superb. It's difficult, very, very difficult to win a division, and they've cracked it. One more game to go. Kieran, you mentioned the awards before the game. James Morris got Young Player of the Season. Ismail Assar got Goal of the Season, which we were aware of. Seems a long time ago now. We've spoken about that. And unsurprisingly, Mr. João Pedro took home the Player of the Season gong, and then duly disappeared off, potentially in a helicopter down to Brighton. How true that is, we're not sure, but certainly a helicopter took off at some point, and he wasn't there on the final lap of the pitch. Perhaps we need to tune into the Brighton game to see if he's been unveiled down at the Amex. But lads, I just did want to talk about João quickly. Obviously a supreme player. We're lucky to have had him. I'm not going to dwell on the disappointment, because I think it is disappointing that we're having to let him go under these circumstances. The idea would have been that he left us in the Premier League and having powered us on to... We know what the blueprint, we know what the drill was supposed to be. It hasn't panned out like that, and it is a shame that he's leaving in these circumstances. Dave, how does he rank in terms of... The most skillful players to have worn the yellow shirt, or are we not able to really properly rank him because of the team he's had to play?
John asked me this question earlier on, and we were kind of having a debate about whether what his best attributes are, and whether he, when you ask that question, is he the most skillful player? He's an excellent dribbler, likes to carry the ball. You know, get in and around the box, get his shots off. He can play number 9, he can play 10, he's played wide. But then is he as skillful, purely skillful, as, say, I don't know, Anthony McNamee, for example, or like even John Barnes or Nordin Vuta? Like, he...
That is the most eclectic group of players. I definitely would want to be in that five-a-side team.
Absolutely. But he's quite a direct player. He likes to get the ball and dribble past people, play 1-2s. And I think... We have only scratched the surface, I think, of his potential at Watford. He arrived as a young boy, still from Brazil. Took him a while to, you know, made his debut against Tranmere. It was in one of those games. It was in one of those cup games. Yeah. I'm sure he made his debut in and around that time. And we've seen him grow in stature, but on the pitch, physically, mentally as well. But he's we still feel like we never quite got that amazing season out of him where he could have scored 20-plus goals and he had injuries, stop-start, he was in teams that got relegated, teams that have struggled in the Championship, and yet he's still managed to... He still managed to sort of rise above all of the difficulties surrounding the club at that time and improve as a player and attract interest from big clubs. He nearly went to Newcastle, now he's gone to Brighton, and I'm really pleased for him. I'm really pleased for him, and I will look, you know, he's going to be one of those players that I will look out for as a Watford fan throughout his career and always have a bit of pride if he does well. And the fact that he's gone to Brighton, who are a club who are upwardly mobile, who are, you know, gaining a real reputation for unearthing these players, and, you know, they haven't unearthed this one. We've done the hard work here for them, and then they've come along and they've swept him off us. But he goes into a team that's well coached, that has a lot of players who I think will gel well with him. He'll fit into that group really well, and I think it's brilliant because he's crying out to be in a team that knows what it's doing, and to have a coach that can tell him exactly what to do. Because at times this season it's literally just been him running around doing it all on his own, and he's operating completely, you know, it's not his fault at all, but he's just trying to do everything because there's no proper system around him. There's lots of players who aren't on his wavelength. So I'm really excited to see what he does at Brighton.
Kieran, Geordie, just before we finish on Zhao, have you got a favourite moment, or if they were going to recreate one of those art of football T-shirts with Zhao Pedro on it, what would he be doing? Favourite moment or your abiding memory of Zhao Pedro, Geordie?
I go back to when he first turned up, and one of the fans had to lend him some gloves. That was kind of, you know, one of those humble beginnings. You thought, you know, here's a guy, he's probably looking a bit wide-eyed at this world he's just moved over to from the other side of the world. You're thinking, is he hype? You know, we've had players who've come in and played at World Cups for Brazil, and we've had players who've disappeared out of nowhere who we thought were going to be amazing. You kind of, that's that excitement of, is this one going to be one of the good ones or one of the bad ones? And I think Kieran mentioned earlier about loser. We need to see the best of loser because, you know, take someone like De Bruyne. De Bruyne looks good.
I'll take someone like De Bruyne.
Yeah, but he's got Haaland, he's got Mahrez, he's got Grealish, he's got Gundogan. He's got good players around him and they know what they're doing. And I think Pedro and loser have lacked that. And I think I echo what Dave said. You know, in a team that where he's not the big fish, where he's got to fill a role, and there's an expectation, he's got better opponents who don't give him too long to think, make him do things off instinctively, we'll see if he can step up. There's no reason why he shouldn't. So fingers crossed for him, and just good luck, you know, good luck to him.
Kieran, you got a particular memory of Zhao, or is it like the other guys? Is it sort of a sense of slight melancholic feel that it's a promise unfulfilled in a yellow shirt?
He's going to be more Richarlison than Douglas Rinaldi, isn't he, I think? I dropped it in our WhatsApp group last week. Derby away, the winner that he got in the season that we got promoted. I think, you know, we'd seen a little bit of him before that, but I think it was early on in that Championship season, away from home, and he's picked the ball up, hasn't he, about 25 yards out and bent it into the top corner, and you just sort of thought, moment of absolute class. And, you know, I remember when he made his debut, he looked absolutely tiny, didn't he? He was scrawny.
It was against Tranmere in the FA Cup, actually.
Good research,
Dave, on the top. So Tranmere, this kid comes on, he's not probably built enough for that level of football, but he's grown into it, and you know, we said it with Loser, he's not had the players around him to really perform to his level, and he's going to get that at Brighton. We don't know what Brighton's squad's going to look like next season, not for us to discuss on this podcast, but we know that they've got players that are in demand, but he will fit in really well there. I think they're a club on the up, and I personally think that he will go on to be better than Richarlison, and he's not exactly had a bad career himself. So wish him well. I think the reception that he got beforehand, you know, when players leave, there can sometimes be a slight bitterness from fans, but there was certainly no sign of that when he came out and addressed the crowd for the 3 seconds that he did.
I think, short but sweet little message from Zhao there. I think what's interesting, and I think if Gino Pozzo watches Match of the Day next year, seeing Purvis Estupinian linking up with Zhao Pedro, that is, and Danny Welbeck, yeah, that is as clear a what you could have won as there possibly is. So that's someone departing the football club. Before we wrap up this week, there is going to need to be a key someone coming into the football club in the shape of a head coach. Now, I mean, my personal take is there's a lot that needs to be sorted out at Vicarage Road for this to be even relevant, to be honest. Obviously, he's one of the most important members of staff there, but I think we've seen over the last 2 years we've had six managers, head coaches come in, all of them been unable to get a tune out of the rabble that have been served up for them. So it looks like former Barnsley, West Brom and Besiktas head coach Valerian Ismail is certainly on the radar. Dave, how are we feeling about him as a potential candidate? But on a wider sort of basis, is it possible at this stage to get excited about anyone coming in as head coach when we know full well all the issues that are at play?
I think it is difficult to be excited about the potential arrival of a new coach when there's still so much to be sorted out with the squad and the unrest with Gino. We're still going to wait to see what happens with Gino talking to the fans and, you know, Giaretta's still there and Ben Manga and who's making the decisions, and there's all that stuff that we all know about.
Key one though, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge, but it's difficult for us to really sort of sit down and be excited like you might normally be in a summer when a new manager comes in, or because to go into a summer with optimism. Normally going into a pre-season, you always have hope and belief that you can get it right and new players coming in, it's exciting, but it feels a bit difficult for us to be in that mode of thought at the moment. But Ismail will be a strange one. He had great season with Barnsley, got Barnsley into the playoffs, you know, made a real impact there, and then he got a big move, relatively speaking, to West Brom, and didn't go well for him there. Got sacked, but I think they were fifth when he got sacked, and I don't know the precise sort of context around that season, whether it was just or not, but for whatever reason, it didn't work out. If I'm right, and I think I remember seeing a tactical video sort of analysis of him a long time ago when he was at Barnsley, he's like sort of uber long ball. Like he literally would like instruct his players to just boot it as high as possible in the air. He has some sort of weird theory about like how that would kind of cause chaos and kind of...
Perhaps you can see why he's high on our list, because that's something that our players can do, hit it in the air, but that's it.
But I don't know whether he's changed his style since or whether that was very particular to his time at Barnsley or whatever, but I gather that he has got a reputation for being very direct, which again would kind of be a bit like, there's never a clear pattern with our head coach hires, are there? They're always completely different from one another, and it looks like that'll probably be the same again. But he may not get the job. Adam Leventhal's been reporting that there are other candidates on the shortlist and that Ismail is not the front runner, that there's German coaches they haven't been named yet, but he's reporting that there are German coaches on the shortlist as well. You'd imagine that would probably be the sort of Ben Manga side of things, and then where Ismail comes from, I don't know. But, I mean, it will be interesting to see what happens, because with all this unrest and all this talk around Gino, obviously it feels like we've got to a point at the end of the season where the fans really finally have turned and are focused on Gino and his running of the club, and we're dissatisfied with it. But regardless of how we feel, he's still got to run a football club, appoint a new head coach, get a new squad of players for next season and go again. And he may well continue to do it in the way that he's done it, and we might not like that, but it's going to happen, so we're going to have to probably live with it, get on with it, and we'll be, you know, back in the same situation next season. Who knows how long the new manager will get and all that nonsense. But it's difficult to be excited right now, really. But there's certainly going to be as much change in a pre-season as we've seen for a long time, I think.
Well, I mean, what's interesting for me is you mentioned those names there, Manga, Gino Pozzo, Cristiano Giaretta. There's so many cooks in this overcrowded kitchen turning out bad dish after bad dish at the moment, and you do worry who is going to be making the decision on this head coach. Is it going to be Ben Manga? Because you'd like to think that Ben Manga, if what everyone thinks is true, he's got his list of players, his targets lined up. Right, Mr. Head Coach, these are the players we've got coming in. This is option A, this is option B, this is option C. Can you work with this year? But is there any faith that there is anything like that level of joined up thinking at Watford happening? And I think the reason it's not happening is because it's not allowed to happen. I think Gino Pozzo is far too involved. What's Cristiano Giaretta doing? He's obviously there at the behest of Pozzo for some reason. Are they working harmoniously together as a unit, as a senior sort of officials, senior decision makers at the club? I've got my severe doubts at that. It feels like there's too many people at the top probably pushing in different directions, and it just makes me worry that you've got to get the head coach appointment right, you've got to get this culture right somehow, then you've got to get that. We've already sort of alluded to it, talking about who's going to stay, who's going to go in terms of the playing staff. You've got to get the playing recruitment right to fit with the head coach. The left hand has got to talk to the right hand, and at this football club it really, really doesn't feel like much of the players' left foot don't talk to their right foot. The hierarchy are really struggling in terms of understanding where they need to be. Kieran, Jordy, I'm going to put you on the spot now. We've washed away and there's no Manga, there's no Giaretta, there's no Duxbury, there's no Pozzo. You get to name the new Watford head coach for the 2023-24 season. Who is it? Sensible answers only, please, Jordy. I can see your mind whirring away.
I've no idea, Mike. I mean, I think it comes down to, you know, what Dave says. It doesn't really matter. If we got Guardiola and his character, his presence would drive change. But, you know, we're talking Brighton are playing now, we're talking about João Pedro. If De Zerbi had come in and relatively anonymous to us this season, would he have done as well as he has at Brighton? I think the manager's a cog in a machine. And you talk about different amount of chefs, or is it all Gino dictating it? Who knows? I think what we need is everybody to be cohesive off the pitch, to bring cohesion on the pitch. I think that's what we've lacked, and we've talked about the intangibles and the invisibles. It really doesn't matter who comes in and who's available, and you know, with us sitting outside a pub aren't going to have our finger on the pulse of all the European managers available. I think it needs to be someone who buys into the vision, who the club buys into, and who is supported, which is what we thought we were getting last summer. It didn't work out for long enough. That manager's shown that actually with a bit of support they can do well. I think we need to not be so knee-jerk, you know, come October next season, not be so knee-jerk and look back and say, you know what, we really took advantage of the summer. So whoever comes in has the foundation, has the momentum, and, you know, we are looking at success regardless of who they are.
Elegantly swerved. The only name you came up there was Pep Guardiola. So
I'll take him.
KT, have you got a name?
I haven't, mate, no, and I was nodding along as Jordy was talking there, and I think Colin and I said it on the podcast that we did on the way back from Luton. That game was very soon after Antonio Conte had his say about Tottenham and how it doesn't really matter who coaches that team, they are still going to have the same sort of results and the same sort of attitude. I think we're in a similar position. I said it at the time. I don't think it matters who manages us at the moment. I think, you know, you mentioned all those names that need to start working together. We need to avoid, like Jordy said, we need to avoid a situation that we found ourselves in at the start of last year, where we've gone very public on backing a young manager, going against the grain of what we'd done previously, and then sacking him after, 10 games, 12 games? He's gone on to do pretty well since then. I would like to see a similar sort of manager to him, but this time giving him the backing. I said at the start of the season, not on the podcast, but to friends and family, if we finish 15th, then fine. But at least we've given the manager a season. We need some stability. We haven't done much better than that. We finished 11th. Yes, 6 points off the playoffs, but I would rather have finished 11th with the same manager in place. We've gone through three again this year.
Plenty of work to be done then. But our job of work is done. We've seen through this absolutely... Well, I was going to swear on the podcast. I've got through the entire season without swearing, I think. I'm not going to ruin it now. You can fill in the blanks yourself at home. The season's over. Still plenty to come from us from the Rookery End, though, so do keep listening. Thanks, as ever, to everyone for listening throughout the season. We know it's not fun reliving these games that have been left a lot to be desired. So thanks for sticking with us. Plenty more to come. Jordy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Hollywood, thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Dave, how are you feeling?
I'm all right. You're mischaracterising me today. You're saying that my mood is all because I've been on the beers in Munich for the weekend. Yeah. It's Gino's fault. It's not my fault.
The lady doth protest too much. The man is an absolute husk. Andy, thanks.
Cheers, boys.
That's it then. 2022, 2023 done. Come on, you horns.